Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
The Southern Cross, Wonders of the Night Sky, Chapter 11. Somehow in my mind I missed out telling you about or writing up about Aurora Borealis. I really can't call that astronomy, but that's me. Okay, so the Southern Cross, and what I sort of rather like about the Southern Cross is that the top star is a red star. The other stars are blue or bluey white. So that's an interesting thing, that's red, and that's, you've got different things. It's called Crux, and it's actually a sail in, I think, Hydra, whatever it is. So Southern Cross is sort of a common name, is an asterism, and so you've got constellation, which is the official grouping. Then you've got Chinese constellations, which is, you know, from a different culture. Then you have sort of popular talking points, asterism, and then just cool shapes coming across here. Okay, the Southern Cross. We arrived on Grand Cayman Island for our honeymoon on a warm, humid night in the mid-April, stepping off the plane onto the tarmac. I turned around to face south, and there it was, the Southern Cross. Back home, the cross never climbs above the horizon. Seeing it here made the 2,000-mile flight as much an astronomical journey as the celestial one. Okay, this is honeymoon. There you go. The Southern Cross is the quintessential constellation, or sort of asterism, of the southern skies. If you ask a northerner to name something in the southern sky, you're not likely to hear Dora or Goldfish or Musica the Fly. Nope, it's the Southern Cross, more formally Crooks. There's a good reasons for this. While the cross is the smallest of the 88 constellations, you can easily cover the figure with three fingers held at arm's length. It contains three of the sky's brightest. Oh, they're talking about the combination here of the crooks. It has to be the. They have to talk about the pointers in the cross. Okay, well, let's listen to it. Three of the stars. Brightest 25 stars, so there's about 5,000 stars. A crooks, B crooks, and G crooks. Oh, wow! So they are talking about the crooks, and they're sort of bright. And so that's the line extended through the long axis of the cross. Points very close to the southern pole star, Sigma Octantis, much the same way the pointers stars in the Big Dipper guide us towards the North Star. Southern Hemisphere residents so identify the cross that it features on the flags of Australia, New Zealand, Brazil, Papua New Guinea, and Samoa. Well, there you go. I didn't know it was on the Brazilian flag. For northerners, Crooks is a key to learning the constellations of the southern spring sky. Find it and you'll be on your way to near Centaurus, Lupus the Wolf, and Vela the Sails. Set smack dab in the middle of the southern Milky Way. The Southern Cross region is rich in astronomical goodies. From the dark sky, you'll be immediately struck by the big hole left southeast of the Crooks that looks like someone has poured ink into a star. This is the Coalsack Nebula, an enormous cloud of interstellar dust located 600 light years from Earth, so that's right, that's almost next door. God. And one of the most prominent dark nebula visible with the naked eye. At this very moment, denser clumps of the dust cloud in the Coalsack are collapsing to form young protostars. Millions of years from now, our descendants will look and see these lumps of coal have ignited to form a new generation of stars and star clusters. Serendipitously, the useful star cluster nicknamed the Jewel Box, and unrelated to the Coalsack, glimmers along the northern border, just 1 degree from Bell Crooks. Oh, there you go. So it's A, B, C, G, and so there's D in there. Um, Bright enough to glimpse with the naked eye and binoculars, it's one of the most gorgeous sights you'll ever see in a small telescope. I've viewed it a couple of times with my little 3.5-inch refractor on the southern vacations, but I'm long overdue for another look. And it is, can I say, it is a beautiful little, so there's red stars, there's a little globular cluster. That's all you're going to say. It's not going to say very much about it. Okay, there you go. Let's see. Here's how the 19th century astronomer John Herschel, who gave the cluster its name, described the site in the results of the astronomical observations made during the years 1834, 5, 6, 7, 8 at Cape of Good Hope. This cluster, though neither a large or rich one, is yet extremely brilliant and beautiful object when viewed through the instrument of sufficient aperture to show distinctly the very different colours of its constituent stars, which gives the effect of a superb piece of fancy jewellery. You nailed it, John. Can I say, that's absolutely beautiful. It is actually one of the more sexy things to go out. There's sort of the nebula in Orion's sword with Alpha Centauri. So there's Alpha Centauri, there's Alpha Centauri A, Alpha Centauri B, and Proxima. Centauri is the constellation, so Centauri is a proper constellation. If there's one star we've heard, it's in the southern hemisphere star sky, it's Alpha Centauri, the brightest or alpha star of the constellation Centaurus, the Centaur. Its fame comes from the proximity of the trillions of stars in the universe. Alpha Centauri is the closest star system to our solar system. Notice I said system. We see a single star with the naked eye, but with telescopes, it'll show three. I've never seen three. I go on. And it's interesting that naked winkers knew there were two stars. So what was going on there? The brighter pair, Alpha and Beta Centauri, revolve around each other every 80 years and are currently, in 2018, near the minimum separation as seen from Earth. But they're still not so close together that a 3-inch telescope magnifying 100 times can't slip them apart. The pair of suns lie 4.37 light years from Earth. What exactly does it mean? Moving at so many miles per hour for a trillion miles, it takes a year. Or, the best way I say it, it's 9.6 petameters, trillion kilometers. Oh, no, yeah, there you go, 9.3 trillion kilometers. This is a light year, it's 9.3 trillion kilometers. Takes like 4.37 years to reach. Oh, so I've got that distance completely nailed. Oh, good, I should speak to him. The fastest speed attained by man-made object was NASA's Juno spacecraft. When it arrived in Jupiter, the planet's gravity briefly accelerated it to quarter of a million kilometres an hour in relation to the planet. Let's say we'd have launched the rocket from Earth to Alpha Centauri travelling at that speed. How long would it take there? 17,000 years. Yikes, it's a long time away. Oh, there's Alpha Centauri at various points. Another way to visualize Alpha's distance is to shrink sun size to, 102 millimeter sphere. At this scale, Jupiter would be a marble 20 feet. 16 meters away. Pluto would be a grain of sand, a quarter of a mile from the Sun. And Alpha Centauri, drum roll please, a pair of spheres, 5 inches across, 2,000 miles away. Okay, so he's into it, but he's just ripped it. Okay, but let's move on to more pleasant thoughts. Truth be told, the bright AB star isn't actually the closest star. The honour goes to Alpha's third companion, a small, faint red dwarf called Proxima Centauri. Proxima orbits a quarter of a light year from the bright pair, putting it a tad closer to the solar system at 4.2 light years. Unfortunately, 11th magnitude Proxima is too faint to see with the naked eye or binoculars, but a small 4-inch telescope will show it. Wow. It's thought for a time that the alien planet called called an exoplanet revolved around Alpha Centauri B, but later analysis confirmed the object was an artifact and not real. Pity how cool it would have been to look at Alpha Centauri and know it carried a planet in tow. Now, for the good news, it turns out the little Proxima has one instead. Oh, yeah, well, there you go. Discovered by the European Observatory, so little Proxima has one, but I'll have to explain about stars. Discovered by the European Southern Observatory in 2016, Proxima carries is about 1.3 times more massive than the Earth and revolves around the star once every 11 days, a distance of about 4.6 million miles. So it's a lot closer to that sun. Although it lies with the approximate Hamilton at a distance which liquid water would be able to stabilize on the surface, occasional but deadly blasts of ultraviolet radiation flames on the host star make the nearest planet uninhabitable. Well, here you go. That's a beautiful picture like that. Well, here goes my favourite ones. Imagine looking back towards the sun, the solar system from Proxima's planets. What would the sky look like at night? You might be surprised to learn most constellations would appear virtually identical. 4 light years is a drop in the bucket when it comes to stellar distances, like visiting a neighbour down the block. How odd to think that after travelling so far, the sky would appear nearly unchanged. To see a more pronounced shift in stars, would have to journey hundreds of light years from home. Viewed from Alpha Centauri, the Sun would be the brightest star in the constellation Cassiopeia, the one with the shape letter W, because that's opposite. Yeah, you know, opposite. And the alien Centaurian eyes scanned the skies, were a notable light on their star maps. Oh, okay. Chapter 13, the Orion Nebula, going through here. Yeah. I love the Orion Nebula, and they show exactly how to find. Okay. This must be much bigger. Oh, okay. In kindergarten, I always look forward to an afternoon nap. We lay out our blankets, and the teacher would draw the shades and turn off the lights. For the next half hour, the 24 of us snuggled into cocoons and slumbered in semi-darkness. I sometimes think that the quiet time of regeneration when I eyeball the Orion Nebula on winter nights. Tucked inside the fluffy folds of its glowing cloud of interstellar dust and gas, hundreds of embryonic stars toss and turn as they prepare to shed the clouds and shroud them and burst forth as blazing new suns. A few of them are already up and about, spilling out light for us to see the nebula as a small star studded off the puff directly below Orion's belt. But this is what I always like doing in the army, that Orion will always be up in summertime. The Betelgeuse, Orion Nebula, Cirrus, Rigel. Oh, okay. It's really poorly drawn here. Hundreds of nebula dot the sky, but Orion Nebula ranks among the brightest, easily visible with the naked eye from suburban and rural locations on a moon-free night. It looks like a star. It's a hazy patch about two full moons wide. Two full moons, wow. Centered on a bright multiple stars, Theta Orionis, so-called the trapezium. The nebula stretches about 25 light years, the same distance from Earth to the bright star Vega in the Summer Triangle flame, but the distance of 1,345 light years fits closely in the field of view of a small telescope. Maybe the most amazing thing about the largest and closest star making factory is the age of the stars that it sets aglow. Some are as young as 30,000 years. Early modern humans in Europe were at work on cave paintings before the nebula is even visible to the eye. Not long before people crossed the the Bering land bridge that once connected Asia and the Americas. The first stars and nebula burned and blew their way through the billows of dust, exposing themselves to the glare of humanity for the first time. We've grown up with the Orion Nebula. It has evolved, and so have we. In the 21st century, the Orion Nebula remains a hotbed of research for astronomers, seeking to understand the process of stellar birth from the hand of gravity, from the simple beginnings as gas and dust. Sky watchers can partake in both the science and raw beauty of the most famous nebula. Through binoculars, Orion reveals an additional stars and a shape that suggests a flower opening in the morning sunlight. A 8-inch telescope brings the Hilbert gas cloud into and adds colour to. Green is the easiest to see, with hints of rose red of the nebula. That's Attapat. So green is oxygen. What I really didn't realise, it was that amazingly big, two full moons wide. It doesn't look that big to me. Similar to how neon gas glows orange-red and electric current passes through it, the hot young stars and trapezium, especially the brightest Thetis Orionis C, beams a powerful ultraviolet light across the nebula gases, exciting them to glow. Through our telescopes, we see only a handful of Orion stars. Most are hidden within embryonic clouds of gas and dust, invisible in ordinary light. Astronomers use telescopes sensitive to infrared light to form a form of light that we can feel as heat, to peer through the dust and photograph the fury of stellar birth. They discovered nearly 3,000 stars hold up on the sun, making Orion as much a star cluster as a nebula. Wow. That is just what's going on there. That's pretty amazing. The Crane Nebula. No, that's something that we see in the southern hemisphere as well. The southern hemisphere is absolutely gorgeous, guys and girls. Millions of years from now, when the remaining gas is converted into stars and cleaned up by stellar winds, humans will look up and brand new star cluster in the place of a misty mass. The Orion star cluster, from the looks of it, it could become one of the richest and brightest clusters in the sky. That would would that we live that long to see it? Well, I've got one heartbeat. My heartbeat's 10 million years old. Okay, well, I'll go and put this off. This is 17 minutes. Look, I think I can do a bit more on this. The Carina Nebula, number 14. In the Orion Nebula, if the Orion Nebula had a big sister, her name would Carina. Sometimes it seems southern latitude sky watchers have all the good stuff. Not only do they get fantastic views of Orion, but they have the closest star Alpha Centauri, the brightest and biggest globular cluster Omega Centauri, a separate entity, and the largest and brightest star, brightest nebula Carina. All the more reason to plan a trip to the tropics. Beautiful. Visible without optical aid as a brighter patch of the southern Milky Way, a Carina Nebula is a stellar nursery like Orion, but on the far grander scale, using NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory. Wow. Well, now I know where it is. I'll look for it. Tonight's going to be a reasonably bright night, I think. Binoculars. Visible without optical aid as a brighter patch of the southern Milky Way, the Carina Nebula is a stellar nursery. That's all. Wow. Is that it? Well, there's a nebula within the nebula. My godfather, that's just... Astronomers have uncovered more than 14,000 stars in the Carina Nebula region. With a diameter of more than 200 light years, it's 8 times as large as Orion Nebula and covers twice as much sky, about 2 degrees. Located a little more than a fist length from the rest of the southern, right of the Southern Cross, that's where it's rotated up. Even in the view of binoculars, it makes you ooh ah. The nebula resides in one of the most stunning parts of the Milky Way. The whole region glitters with stars and star clusters, slashed and jagged lanes of dark interstellar dust. In a 10x50 glass, rivers of dark dust part the glowing nebula into several individual islands, the whole overlain by a blizzard of stars. For a compelling experience, point a 6-inch or larger telescope there. Let's hear from the 19th century English astronomer John Herschel again. He's a person, he was a giant of photography, so he invented the word a still and a snapshot. Good on you, John Herschel. And his face is just so rugged. His face is incredible. Okay. The results from the astronomer, and this is a quote: "It's not easy for language to convey the full impression of the beauty, the sublimity of the spectacle which this nebula offers." In a certain sense, you know, why is he quoting so much from him? Ushered in by its so glorious innumerable procession of stars, to which it forms a sort of climax, and in part the heavens otherwise full of interest. I still remember my first look at Corinne on a 4-inch telescope. Because it was a great size, I had to use my lowest magnification to squeeze everything in to one field of view. Stars glimmers everywhere, and I recall seeing several star clusters within and such beyond the bounds of the nebula. A wide, dark channel of cosmic dust cuts across the middle and then aligns sharply to the northeast. Inside the brightest island, the brightest star within the nebula, Eta Carinae, glowed. Oh, that's Eta Carinae, that's beautiful. Orange. Just to the west, I could faintly make out the Keyhole Nebula, a small dark cloud in the shape of, you guessed it, a keyhole. Eta Carinae shines a fourth magnitude and is dimly visible within the naked eye. But as with so many astronomical objects, an ordinary appearance often masks extraordinary character. While appearing single in most telescope, Eta is comprised of at least two extremely massive hot stars, one originally 200 times more massive than the Sun, the other 30 to 80 times as hefty. If you're looking at stars and stars most likely to go supernova, I put my cards on Eta Carinae. Sometime, and it goes off, we're in trouble. Sometime in the relatively near future, the stars will run out of nuclear fuel. Without the heat, the pressure of nuclear burning to hold back the crushing grip of gravity, the star will implode and then rebound outward, tearing itself to bits. A supernova explosion that the astronomers predict will outshine, will shine as brightly as Venus. Well, I think we're in trouble there. But it is, the entire thing is that it's not the collapse of gravity, it's a pressure wave, a nuclear powered pressure wave which goes in. Not that it has been napping peacefully in recent years. In April 1840, during an outburst that began in 1837, it briefly reached magnitude -1, brighter than any other star except Sirius, then gradually faded back. It fluctuated a bit and has been brightening steadily again since the mid-20th century. Oh, that's interesting that the star's changing brightness. Now, see what it says here, what goes on here. I'll finish this off. And back in the mid-1800s, Eta's extra brilliance changed how what parts of the nebula were illuminated, so that it looked different to observers then than it does now. Astronomers think all the talent started when one or both Etna's stars switched over to burning different nuclear fuels. As steady, as reliable as they seem to the casual gaze, stars evolve. They age just like people, only over much longer time spans. Stars bloat up, shrink, toss off the atmosphere, heat up, cool, and even explode, all because of what fuel they have, or don't have, available to burn. Medium-sized telescopes working at high magnifications around 300 will show a bubble of gas and a dust called homunculus, little man, around Etam, released during the great outburst of the 19th century and still expanding outward at over 1.5 million hours. The homunculus actually is the medieval term for sperm, because I believe that sperm was little men, you know, that women had nothing to do with it. Whether Orion or kind of pink clouds of ongoing star formation show up not only in the Milky Way, but by the thousands of other galaxies too. Within each, new stars are beginning to be fashioned from the same dust that burnt the Sun and our solar system so long ago. You and I, we're part of a grand scheme that stretches from the Big Bang to the end of the universe as we know it. When some astronomers predict there will be little left but thin gruel of particles and radiation, some astronomers predict there will be... some grim ends make one shudder, but remind how fortunate we are to live and have the opportunity to do good. Standing at the eyepiece of a telescope before the mighty crater offers the opportunity to dip our toes into the river of time. Oh, the Pleiades. He's definitely picking the best ones. These are the ones that I'd pick for sure. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.